Hi, welcome to the podcast. My name is Tim Andrews. Let's get right to it. My first guest this week. You hear that music behind me? That's yacht rock, okay? And my guest is Philly Ocean. He is the lead vocalist for Yachtly Crew, the nation's number one yacht rock band. Yachtly Crew is currently on their 100 city full steam ahead tour. To find out more about that, go to yachtlycrew.com. Now listen, the closest show to us isn't until October. You have plenty of time to get yourself familiar with the band. October 11th in Perry, Georgia. It's the Georgia National Fair, and that's only 2 hours from Atlanta. Just get on I-75 South and go 106.4 miles. Philly Ocean, welcome to the podcast. Great name, by the way. Great name.
Thank you so much.
Are you from Philly?
I'm playing off of Billy Ocean.
Billy Ocean.
Caribbean
duh.
Queen is one of our favorite songs to cover in the yacht rock lexicon.
Yeah.
And all of us in the band have our own yacht rock themed monikers.
Okay, that's great. That's great. What's your favorite one outside of your own?
Probably Pauly Shore's.
Oh, what a great name. See, this is great. It's like, I'm making an analogy. You may not agree, but it's sort of to me a little bit like kayfabing in the wrestling world. I love it. I love just the plays on the names, and I love a good pun every now and then. So it's amazing.
yes, indeed.
I'd said it in the intro, but Philly, your closest show to Atlanta is way off. It's in October 11th at the Georgia National Fair. In Perry, Georgia. When can Atlanta expect a show?
You know what? We're working on that right now, but we are all over the country this summer. We have a really, really huge tour. Over 30 dates between June and August is like our big, big tour, but we do dates literally every weekend, over 130 shows this year.
Wow.
We will be not far from Atlanta, you know, within a couple of hours drive, multiple times in that 2-month tour. So I would encourage you to go to our website, yachtlycrew.com, and check out our full tour schedule and see if there's something a little bit closer this summer that you want to maybe make a weekend trip out of. And we also have a year-long residency out at the Palms Casino Resort in Las Vegas, where we play 5 or 6 times a year for a full weekend. So we play 2 shows, one on Friday, one on Saturday. And a lot of our yacht rock fans like to come out and make a weekend of that and have a really, really fun time. The show actually this coming weekend is by the pool. So we'll actually be performing on the poolside stage, which is this massive stage. People can either be on the loungers or they can be floating in the pool themselves, whatever they want to do. And it's a lot of fun.
All right. Picture this. You're on. You're not on. You're at a pool. You've got a drink in your hand, the sun is out, and there's some awesome music playing in the background. What could be better than that? And by the way, I want to tell everybody, Yachtly Crew, which is a pun itself, crew is spelled C-R-E-W, but you do have the umlauts when you go check out the website, so yachtlycrew.com.
That's right.
And it's the full speed ahead tour. Now, you have a current EP out right now called Seize the Day, again a pun, S-E-A-S. It's 6 songs, and it's available now at yachtlycrew.com, or you can get it on Spotify. Now, you got 5 cover songs on there, and they're all amazing. They're all well-performed, and they all sound great.
Thank you.
But you also have an original called Sex on the Beach. Can you talk about that single?
Yeah, so we wrote that song during the pandemic when everything was kind of locked down. And, you know, kind of from the beginning, we thought, man, if something takes off with Yachtly Crew, and, you know, we really find an audience, which we have now, it would be so cool to kind of write a song and contribute that to this musical genre. And we wanted it to be a song that really fit alongside these originals that we play. And so we wrote this song called Sex on the Beach, and, you know, we looked to a lot of these songs from the 70s and 80s soft rock hits as, like, you know, an example of structure or lyrical style or whatever. And we wrote this song that we really feel like fits right alongside these awesome songs.
Oh, it absolutely does. You could put it in a playlist with all those songs and you wouldn't even know. I mean, you would say, wow,
right,
this fits right in. And it has,
yeah, that's kind of our hope.
It has a modern feel, but it does really capture that sound. Now, how did you get Mario Lopez from Access Hollywood, and for older people like me, Saved by the Bell? How'd you get him involved?
So Mario's been a fan and a friend of the band for a real long time. He stumbled upon us because we had a residency at a world famous musical club in Los Angeles that's called the Viper Room.
Yeah.
And we were playing there all throughout 2019. We would have a Yacht Rock night once a month. It was selling out every week. And one of the nights I'm standing up on stage and I look out into the house and I see, I'm like, oh, is that Mario Lopez wearing a captain's hat right there? Like what is going on? It was truly a bizarre and awesome moment. And he had brought everyone that he knows to our show. They were all wearing captain's hats and having a great time. And ever since then, we've done a ton of shows with him. He's hired us for Christmas parties. He's hired us to do fundraising events, you know, for children's hospitals out here in the Los Angeles area. And when we were recording the music video, he said, you just let me know when and where, and I'll be there.
That's great. And people can check out the video for Six on the Beach on your website or also on YouTube. In fact, I texted a friend of mine who works with Mario, and I said, I said, do you know, have you seen these guys? I go, I haven't seen him yet, but I know Mario is obsessed with them and loves them, so you're going to have a good time.
Oh, that's awesome.
So for the uninitiated people out there in the audience, can you like briefly explain the yacht rock music genre, where it comes from, and maybe why young people today still dig music their parents and grandparents experienced in real time?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a rebranding, a reinvention of songs that are ultimately incredibly beloved and timeless. You know, this music is just good music. It's fun music. It's well written. It brings a smile to your face. Many of the songs are love songs, you know, which is just, it's a theme that has been tried and true in the music industry for many, many, many years. And there are songs also that have been shared across generations. You know, I was born in 81. So some of these songs predate me, but I'll tell you what, they were absolutely the soundtrack of my youth. I mean, I grew up loving this music. My parents had it on constantly. And so it does have that kind of transcending nature to it where, you know, people all over the place have listened to this music and they love it. And it's, you know, it's just an awesome, awesome thing.
Now, I was born in 1970, so I grew up 1 to 10 right there in the wheelhouse. My mom always had the radio on. And by the age of 8, I was keeping track of all the top 40 songs, writing everything down, and I had to go to Radio Shack to do this, to buy the 45s. I don't have them anymore. I wish I did. But a lot of these songs, as they say now, are bangers in my book. And like you said, they're living proof that good music stands the test of time. And you know, I was going to ask you if you grew up with them, but you did. And you've been in that groove your whole life. I mean, Yeah, the genre kind of faded away by the mid-80s, I would say, as the hair metal took over. Mm-hmm. And then you had the splintering of pop music as everything kind of just went into its own genre, you know, different types of formats on radio stations. But for a while there, we all lived in an era where everybody listened to the same thing.
That's right. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what we're missing in our culture today. You know, we don't have the same references a lot of the time. And you know, we're so fragmented in many ways. And I think that this is kind of something that gives people a place to come back to and connect with others over something that we are all familiar with and we are sharing together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you make a very good point there. It's sort of a central point. When you go to a yacht rock type of show, no matter who's performing it, you see an audience that's completely diverse. And it's everybody knows the songs, everybody's singing along with them. And I think that's great. So maybe you're going to lead the charge to bring everybody back together.
We hope so. You know, we'll do it or we'll die trying.
That's right. What's your favorite yacht rock song to perform? And I want to ask, what's your favorite personally, as in one that you hear on the radio or Spotify or wherever you listen to music and you have to keep singing along with it and you won't get out of your car until it's done?
I mean, Reelin' in the Years by Steely Dan is just such a good song. I mean, the harmonies and the solo and the songwriting, even the drum beat on that, you know, it's just such an incredible song. I love Loggins and Messina, Kenny Loggins, Heart to Heart, Danny's Song. He's just an incredible vocalist. And then, of course, Christopher Cross is just, he's so quintessential, you know, sailing and his melodies. And like, he, in many ways, I think Christopher Cross and Michael McDonald, those two are almost like responsible for the entire sound of yacht rock in many ways, you know.
I loved Christopher Cross, and he still tours.
Yeah, he does.
And still performs a song, and he still sounds really, really good.
Yeah.
How about, do you perform Moonlight Feels Right by Starbuck?
No, but I love that song.
Me too.
We haven't added that one to the set just yet, but yeah, I do love that song.
Is that a yacht rock song, or is it too early?
I think I would say it's probably yacht rock adjacent.
Philly Ocean from Yachtly Crew, thank you for joining me on my show, and I hope to see you in the future when you're in town.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I really do dig that music. Don't go away. Plenty of show left. It's the Popcast with Tim Andrews on 95.5 WSB. Sex on the beach. Welcome back to the Popcast. Thanks again to my first guest on this week's episode, Mr. What was his name again? Oh, yeah, Philly Ocean. They all have these goofy names when they win. It's a great name, but it is a little goofy, and I mean that in the best way possible. Now we're going to change direction a little bit. We're going to talk about resilience, determination, and drive. And my guest is Christy Manifold Spencer. Christy, welcome.
Thanks so much.
And I based this off of the bio, which, by the way, your husband wrote secretly and sent to me.
I believe it, yes.
Yes. Your husband, of course, being Kevin Spencer.
Yes.
From,
Electric
you say,
Avenue.
Electric Avenue, who's been on this program twice. And he's a great guest, and I imagine you're going to be a great guest as well.
Let's hope so.
I think you will. tell me in the audience, because you have so many hats.
I do.
You do. And you never stop moving.
No.
You can go from one career to the next, like that, it seems. But tell everybody who you are and what you do.
My name's Christy Manifold Spencer, and I do a little bit of everything. I am a television producer. I am an interior designer working on a couple of projects with the city of Atlanta. We're doing a little bit of everything. We have a restaurant, you know, here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, you're always busy then. And you won an Emmy.
Oh, yeah. And we recently won an Emmy.
And that's like a national Emmy, right? That's,
yeah.
That's a pretty big deal. Do you have it? Is it on your shelf?
So we've ordered, but not here yet.
They
so.
Make you pay for it? Tell me.
Yeah,
that.
I had to pay for it.
You have to pay for
yeah.
it. Does, let's say, somebody from Breaking Bad, do they have to, the Bryan Cranston has to pay for his Emmys?
Bryan Cranston doesn't because he won directly for his, you know, his category as actor, but like our show won as a whole.
Okay.
So there's like two people who get free ones and everyone else has to buy it.
But it's cool. Still, it's worth
it's
having.
It's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got an award one time from Creative Loafing for being fat on a billboard. So
stop it.
Yeah. But it's not as cool. Not as cool as an Emmy.
That's a fun award though.
It is. Yeah. Best billboard. Hey, who else can say that and then get laughed at?
Yeah.
So, you're from Atlanta. Did you grow up here?
I did grow up here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people who grew up and went on to be in the television and movie industry, you started out working for Turner.
Yes, because that's what everyone did.
Yeah. Did you start out as an intern? Tell us about, or tell me and the audience about your schooling and all that.
Post school, and this is very divisive, but I did both Auburn and Georgia.
You went to both schools.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've been asked this before. Why does Auburn have more than one mascot?
Everyone says this, right?
Yes.
One is a mascot, one is a battle cry.
Okay, War Damn Eagle is the cry.
Uh-huh.
And then Tigers
are the mascot.
All right, so you started there and then you went to UGA.
Mm-hmm.
Where do your loyalties lie now?
If UGA and Auburn play, it has to be Auburn.
Okay.
But otherwise, I pull for UGA throughout the year.
All right. I get that. So I'm a Yankees fan, and when the Braves aren't playing the Yankees, I root for the Braves.
Fair. Yeah.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Kind of the same thing.
What brought you back to UGA?
It was free.
Yeah, okay. I get that. Yeah.
It was free.
And did you major in mass media?
Yeah.
Okay.
Communications.
And what was your dream?
I didn't really know, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I was a flounderer. Like, I started school, I was, you know, pre-med, then pre-pharmacy, then health administration, and then communications, and then public relations, and then back to communications.
Are you one of those people that likes to just learn?
Yes.
And constantly learn new things and
constantly.
Figure things out?
I need to be learning, I need to be reading, I need to be engaged.
That's
yeah.
cool. That's yeah. cool. And what finally got you into mass media?
I quit my job with a major Atlanta-based corporation.
Okay. You can talk about it.
I can.
Is it the one where you can buy planks of wood?
It is.
And then also stuff to clean your deck?
The Big Orange, yeah.
The Big Orange, okay.
I had a fun, great job with the...
That was your first job outside of college.
And yeah.
What kind of job was that?
Government relations.
Government relations. Yeah. So lobbying or...
Working with the lobbyists for the Home Depot.
Okay.
So kind of behind the scenes stuff, coordinating everything. And my turning point, I think, was Hurricane Katrina happened.
Okay.
And the Home Depot like sets up this amazing like hurricane command center, and like there's someone from every department there, and it's really so that they can, you know, have a really quick and fast response. And I think that's amazing. But there was just so much in that whole process that was overwhelming to me.
I bet.
And I just decided that I don't think I'm meant to sit in a cubicle all day.
You didn't like it, did you?
No.
No. Making phone calls. But yeah, sitting in a cubicle all day can be rough unless you're down with that.
Yeah.
But even people in this building, the radio station, there's a lot of people who are in cubicles, but they get up and they go.
Yeah.
And I get it. You don't want to be in a cubicle all day. So your next project after Home Depot, where did you go?
So I quit this like cushy corporate job.
You just quit. I didn't have a job.
Yeah, I just quit. And then I emailed everyone that I knew in the city of Atlanta and said, oh my gosh, my Canadian boyfriend has just moved here and can't work while we work out his visa stuff. And I just quit my job. Help.
Yeah.
So Brian Patrick Flynn, actually, who's a great designer based here in Atlanta, he was at Turner at the time working on moving a makeover. And he said, hey, like, come check this out. I think this would be a good fit for you. And so I started, you know, styling for wardrobe and also doing, you know, helping them out with like staging home,
right,
you know, and stuff like that. And just really fell
awesome.
In love with it.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about your time at Turner. And then I think you probably got bored there and you went somewhere else.
Pretty much.
That's all right. That's what people do. You are listening to Tim Andrews. This is the podcast. My guest, Christy Manifold Spencer. We have a lot more to talk about. Don't go away. It's the podcast on 95.5 WSB. Welcome back to the podcast. My guest, Christy Manifold Spencer. Now, you were telling me during the break, Christy, that you worked for a radio station.
I did.
All right, tell me the story.
My first job ever, I was 14, 15, and my parents had divorced. My mom relocated to this tiny little town in Alabama that's about 10 miles from the Tennessee line, 5 miles from the Georgia line.
Okay.
And there happens to be this country music band that's from there called Alabama.
Oh, you know, I know them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, I'm old.
So Jeff Cook, who was a member of the band Alabama, he owned this AM radio station. And so I don't know why, but they gave me a job there on, I would do Sunday afternoons from noon to 6 p.m.
So you were on air speaking when
yeah.
you were a teenager. Wow. And you were in high school.
I was in high school and they gave me like no oversight. Like they were just like, you know, here's how everything works and just kind of play what you want to play. And I have to preface this with, I am the... like ultimate Gemini, like mm-hmm. everything about me is double side. Like I left brain, right brain, like all of these things. So I would get in there at 14, 15 and play, you know, classic music that I heard my parents listen to, plus top 40.
Oh, it wasn't a country station?
No, it wasn't at the time.
And it was a free form? They let you do
anything?
It was just free
form and they let me do whatever I wanted to do for 6 hours on Sunday.
Oh my God, that is so rare. And that obviously was in the 90s, right?
Yes.
And did you play records or CDs?
It was this little like...
Oh, it was a cart.
Yeah.
So everything was on a plastic
yes.
cart. Yes. Now, did you remember to recue them?
Most of the time. Okay. Although I didn't get in trouble once or twice for that.
Yeah. Yes. That's when I started in radio, all of our commercials were on carts.
Yeah.
And if you did not recue them, then you would have dead air when mm-hmm. you went to the spot. And it was people don't understand that everything now in radio is on a computer. All your commercials, all the promos... all the music, everything. There's
right.
no records. There's no CDs. But back in the day, the first thing I ever learned was how to do the quarter turn for the 45.
Yep.
And the half turn for the 33 and a
nice.
Third.
Nice.
And we didn't play 78s. But in my college station in 1989, we finally got, no, it was 88. We had one CD player.
Nice.
And then I became the PD and I made them buy new ones. And then I got cart machines for music. It's a long, boring story that nobody cares about, and we're not here to hear about me. But that's fascinating. How long did you do that job?
I did it for about a year, and then they did switch the format.
To country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now
sense.
I think it's Christian, maybe.
Probably. Yeah. it's an AM signal still, right?
Yes, just not still an AM.
But does he still own it?
No, he passed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I should know that.
I don't know who owns it now.
Somebody owns it. Some giant soulless corporation.
Totally.
So did you have a love for radio before and after that? Or was it just something you're like, let me try this?
So I think I just had a love for music.
Music, yeah.
I grew up, like I said, here in Atlanta. And for all intents and purposes, was blessed with a godfather-like figure who happened to be Alex Cooley. And I didn't know that he was like a big deal.
Yeah.
I just knew that like my family had this friend and I got concert tickets for whatever I wanted.
That's awesome. So, I wish Alex Cooley had been my friend.
And so
I only knew Peter.
Right?
But not the
and
same.
And Peter was great.
Peter's great. Yeah. But in a different life, I used to get free concert tickets as well.
Nice. So yeah, I think, and one of the cool things about Alex is he would, you know, whatever I asked for within reason was granted. And he always wanted to do like a debrief afterwards. Like
okay.
He wanted to know, he was always so inquisitive about like what younger people were interested in. Right,
right, right.
So he wanted to like download and he wanted to hear like, what did you think about the show? Like, what was your favorite part, your least favorite part? And so I feel like I led a really charmed life and fell in love with music because of that.
Yeah, that's, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, if you had access to that, you probably saw all different types
oh
of bands. And
you're, everything.
What was the coolest one? Can you
oh
remember?
Oh my gosh. Well, there's been, I mean, Music Midtown by far because it was.
You were at some of the originals probably.
Absolutely, yeah. And then I saw, Kevin and I have talked about this before. Oasis did a radio stint and I can't even remember which station it was. Like they never played in Atlanta. But they were,
had to have been
they were
the
here,
one we're not going to mention
it,
with
yeah.
a nine in it.
Yeah. They were here and did like a little 3-song radio thing to promote an album. And Alex got me into that.
Oh,
and that
my
is
gosh.
By far, I think, the biggest, best. Well, he also gifted me my 19th birthday. I got to see Pearl Jam for Halloween.
That's
and that was pretty
cool.
That was pretty impressive.
Like a tabernacle or a
we went to New Orleans.
Okay. Well, that's even cooler. So you get out of radio. You're still a fan of music. I know that. Obviously, your husband is a fan of music.
Yes.
And you guys are right there in that 80s wheelhouse. And I know he likes other stuff.
Yes.
And again, we're not just talking about Kevin. We're talking about you. So you start working at Turner.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after working for Home Depot and government relations, which is as boring as it sounds, I imagine, if you're a creative person.
Right.
And it seems like you have a creative drive. What did you do first at Turner, and how did that kind of lead to what you ended up doing?
Sure. I was schlepping gear at Turner, like wardrobe. So Movie and a Maker would do like personal makeovers for people. And I was the person who would go out and shop for all of that stuff and then do fittings with these people. And
what, did you just go to Phipps?
Them out. Yeah. It was back in the day when you could go, like, I could go to Neiman and buy $20,000 worth of stuff and then go back and return it all.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore.
No, you can't do that anymore.
And also, I got banned from Neiman for, like, 5 years.
For doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Why didn't you just blame it on Ted?
I did, but it didn't work out.
No.
I think they've since lifted that ban for me. But
What was that show? When did that air? That was, it was on TNT or was it?
It was on TBS.
TBS, okay.
Yeah, so TBS, and I believe it was like 04 maybe to, I don't know. I think it ran longer after I left.
It still felt, even though they were monster nationwide cable channels, it still felt up into about the mid-2000s that it was Atlanta. You could still feel a little bit of the Ted Turner influence, and there was still a local feel to those shows.
Totally.
There was Dinner and a Movie, I remember that, and Dinner and a Makeover. So they would... I don't know. It's a lot of fun to see that stuff.
It is.
And now, look at it in the past. And it's not like that anymore.
Yeah, totally. But now, like, you know, as I've expanded and kept doing more and more television, it's so funny that core group of people that I first started with at Turner, like, I seem to have someone from that group on every shoot that I'm on.
Nice.
Yeah. Which is great.
Like the camera people.
Yeah. The grip, the camera guys, like
the best
even
boy.
PAs. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I did television commercials. That was my first real job in town after I left Fuddruckers. I was working for a television production company. All we did were commercials for radio stations all over the country. So I met a lot of different people, and I do still see them every now and then working, so I can relate to that. But it was a lot of fun, and that's kind of what got me here, and that's a long, boring story. But how long were you involved with that job before you moved on to your next thing?
I was there for about 2.5 years. And then actually one of the producers for that show, she recommended me for a job for an HGTV show. She thought it was like a week-long shoot and it ended up being like a full-time position. And I think at first she sort of was like, why did I do this? But then, you know, she was super supportive. So thank you, Julie Baton.
So she recommended you for a freelance thing and then lost you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you must have just picked up there are certain people who, when they work in this industry or the television industry, they pick up all the things around them.
Yeah.
It's not just, I'm doing this one thing.
No.
So you picked up a lot. And what got you ready for HGTV and what did you pick up there?
HGTV taught me so much. It was how to, you know, work with no sleep, how to work 18 hours. You know, it was a lot. No, it was great. It was a good transition. I feel like at Turner, I picked up, like you said, listening to everyone and paying attention. And one thing that I firmly believe that my father taught me a long, long time ago is the one thing you have to do in business in general is never ask anyone to do anything that you're not willing to do yourself.
Yeah.
And he has lived his whole life that way. And I have followed that rule myself. And it's been really good for me.
That is good. Yeah. And that's a great philosophy to have in work. Both of my grandfathers owned businesses and they said sort of the same thing, but I didn't really pay attention. I'm like, somebody will take care of me. You guys are taking care of me now. Are you on camera? Have you ever done on camera?
So I have. I did a show with Brian Patrick Flynn for Magnolia Network.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not for me.
No. What was the show?
Mind for Design is the name of the show. And it was a great show. Brian's a great designer. I was on camera as his project manager.
Okay.
I just don't love being on camera. I'd rather be behind the scenes.
And then Magnolia Network, is that...
Chip and Joanna.
That's a network now?
Yeah.
So they started on what channel?
They started on HGTV.
HGTV. Mm-hmm. My wife got me into them, and I'm not the type of person that would watch these shows.
Sure.
I watched This Old House in the 80s when it was on PBS, and that was
still
the
extent a great
of it.
Show.
I know yeah. it is. I love that host, that old guy. I forget his name.
Bob Vila,
that's right. But I dug that show.
Yeah.
And I watched... with my grandmother, because I didn't like it very much, I watched Home Improvement. But that was the extent... But I really started liking their show mm-hmm. out of Waco where they would fix these houses up and everything. And I know it seems in the TV show like, oh, this only took a week. But
right.
I know it takes forever.
It does.
But did you work and interact with them? They must have just really took off to be able to go from a network to creating their own.
Yeah. And Mind for Design was one of their first shows, you know, like because they were just ramping up this network. So I didn't work with them directly. Brian mostly did that. But It was just a great way to, you know, get in on something that was like kind of small budget and see what you can make of it.
I think when it comes to that show, guys who watch it with their wives, if they're not already interested in that format of, you know, that type of thing,
mm-hmm.
they all want to gravitate to being buddies with Chip. And that's
totally.
What I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Then he got his teeth fixed and I was all mad.
Now he's too pretty.
He's too pretty and he has two, but, you know, smashing things with a hammer is great. We have one more segment. We're going to come back and talk a little more. I hope you're enjoying your time here.
This is great.
All right. Good. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what you're doing right now, things you might want to do that you haven't done yet. And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about Kevin because, you know, he has such a great band and everything. Are you going to go to the show this weekend?
I am.
All right. Well, it's actually tonight. So if you're on your way and listening to this, enjoy the show. Don't go away. We'll be back. One more segment. It's the Popcast with Tim Andrews on 95.5 WSB. Well, there's a black man with black hair. Little boxes. Welcome back to the podcast, my final segment this weekend on the show. Don't forget, you can get this as a podcast on Monday and get the entire thing. Christy Manifold Spencer, we've been talking about your career. We could probably talk for hours and hours as I look at your IMDb. You go from TBS, House of Pain, Dinner in a Movie. You worked for Tyler Perry for a while.
I did. Ooh, when it was at Krog Street, before he got a big fancy studio.
It was at Krog Street?
Krog Street Market.
I didn't know that.
Used to be Tyler Perry Studios.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, you know, I bet you couldn't go there and go to Fred's Meats.
So, no, you could not.
But now you can. You work for the Magnolia Network. Mm-hmm. You've worked all over the place. Worked for Netflix, Roku.
Yeah.
What are you doing now? Because you just quit your job again.
I did last year. I quit my job last year.
Okay.
It was tough, but I did it. I've never quit like that.
Would you no show?
No. I would never do
that. That's not a bar.
It just wasn't working out. It wasn't a good fit.
Yeah.
And I talked to some mentors of mine, and there were several other people on that production that had left already who were higher than me.
Right.
And my mentor was like, you know, why are you still here?
Mm-hmm.
why are you sticking this out? Like, people above you have bailed. It's your time. And so I took his advice and I bailed, and it's been great.
So what did that lead to?
That led to me picking up more design work. So I've always worked both interior design and television at the same time because I think they feed one another. Mm-hmm. Private clients allow me to spend real money on things, and then I can sort of value engineer them for television and vice versa. So you get to try out a lot of new products with TV that then you can pass on to like private clients, right? So I picked up more private clients and then suddenly realized I think right now I'm at $30 million in private client projects. So
these are homeowners or businesses?
Homeowners. So all homes in and around Atlanta, some down at the beach, some up in the mountains. So you know, we're working our way through that. And along with that came this like house that fell into my lap. And I came up with the pitch for a show. And it is now inked for a development deal with Terminal B Television.
Terminal B, what do they produce?
So Terminal B is a relatively new company. It comes from Tom Foreman and David Metzler, who were formerly with Critical Content. For who I did the Netflix show when we won an Emmy.
Yay!
And these guys are like legit. Like Tom did Extreme Home Makeover. Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah.
And then they also did Queer Eye, so they've got like some really good.
The new one or the original?
Both.
Wow.
So they've got some really cool and creative things. And they also did like The Home Edit. Mm-hmm. People are obsessed with those organization women. Yeah. So
my wife, by the way, is organized. If I lived in the house that we live in now, there would have been no renovations, none of that. And, you know, the garbage would be taken out and everything, but it would be a dub. She's organized. She's really good at that mid-century modern thing.
Amazing.
That's what she really enjoys. So I live in that world. I love it.
That's so awesome. So these guys have signed me to a development deal, and we are working our way towards the show now.
Nice. And that'll all be produced here?
Yes. It's based here.
And then what do you do when it's ready? You shop it out?
We're pre-shopping it now.
So, but you already have all the connections.
Yeah.
You have HGTV. You've got Netflix. And what do you think about Netflix? I think that they're growing in the right way. There's so many streaming services, but Netflix, I think, has a real cool thing. They're just their own little world.
I think they're finding their way. I think, you know, they went hard on like home stuff. There were several shows that they put out, and some of them made it and some of them didn't. I think they realized that may not be their niche.
Yeah.
I think in terms of content, they're probably the strongest.
Yeah, I think so. What's next?
What's
you're going to do this, and then you're going to quit that.
No, I'm not going to quit that.
No. You create this this new show. Mm-hmm. Will you be just running it and executive producing?
Yeah.
Who are you going to get to host it?
That's currently in negotiations, but there are talks.
I mean, I know you probably can't say.
Can't, but there are talks with some big country music artists.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start guessing. Are they still performing?
Yes.
All right, that'll help me. What do you like to do when you're not doing any of that? I mean, do you ever go on tour with Kevin or do you go to the
Sometimes.
Shows?
I go on tour with Kevin when it's like to a really nice location.
Yeah, that's smart. That's smart. There's a great story of how he proposed to you.
Oh my gosh. Can you believe that?
We have a little bit of time. We have about 30 seconds. Okay. Can you tell it in 30 seconds?
He surprised me with a proposal on Friday and we got married on Saturday.
Right.
So
you were
a surprise wedding.
You went hiking someplace, right?
Down at English Bay in Vancouver. Yeah.
Yeah. English Bay in Vancouver, which is in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And he had already planned it and had everybody there for you.
He planned a whole wedding himself.
So if you had said no, that would have been awful.
It would have
but
been awful.
But he must have known that you'd say yes. Before we go, that's a great story. Before we go, please tell everybody where they can find your work and if you're interested or have it, social media.
Sure. I don't do social media at all.
Smart.
I'm a pariah.
No, you're not a pariah. You're probably one of the smart people out there.
I feel like there'll be value in it one day, right?
Maybe.
But yeah, you can check us out at bettercreativecompany.com.
And that's your company.
That is my company.
That is your company. And if you need a renovation,
give us a call.
Give us a call. You might end up on television. Thank you for coming over here.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you go back to work now.
Thank you.
It's been a fun time. Come back again. Maybe I'll have both of you on.
Oh, my goodness.
Would you
that? Yes, but you'll never get away from these microphones.
I don't care. We'll spend the whole afternoon and we'll put it out. You've been listening to the podcast. Thank you very much to my guest this week, Christy Manifold Spencer. And also, I got to say it, Philly Ocean. That's not his real name. But everybody check out Yachtly Crew as well. Thanks for listening to the podcast. My name is Tim Andrews. Milani Kai is next. And then coming up at 11, it's The Nightcap with Jared Yamamoto.